Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by liberal blogger Georgia Logothetis, conservative commentator Dan Proft, and Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btbtalk@aol.com. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. And tonight we're going to be talking about, you know, campaign 2008, and a lot has happened this past week. And one of the stories we're going to talk about is a decision that was made by Barack Obama, is that he's going to turn down public financing. Now, early in the campaign, on several occasions, he said that he was going to accept public financing because he has been such an outspoken critic, as has John McCain, to the whole concept of financing campaigns in the United States. But now, because Barack Obama has proven to be just a prodigious fundraiser, earlier this week he announced that he is going to forego the public financing, which means he can raise as much money as he wants. Georgia Logothetis, our liberal, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, once upon a time earlier in the campaign, when he said he was going to follow the rules of public financing, mm-hmm. were you cheering when he said it then?
Well, I think, just to correct the record, he never said it. And it was all part of a form that he had filled out, and I believe it was November, where he said that he would work with the Republican candidate and come to some sort of agreement where both of them would opt into public financing. My understanding is that both camps sat down. Part of the requirements that were bandied back and forth was whether or not to, you know, put a hold on 527s, and basically the talks fell through. An interesting thing, though, you know, when you turn on the talk shows this morning, everybody was talking about Barack Obama's flip-flop. Nobody mentioned John McCain and his experience with public financing this election. Specifically, if you'll recall, he took public financing in the primary. That was when his campaign was absolutely broke. And then he turned around and used it as collateral for a loan. What happened afterwards, once the money started rolling in, he said, well, you know what, on second thought, I don't want it. And the FEC said, no, you can't do that because you need our permission to withdraw from public financing.
Dan Proft is our conservative. Dan, I want to get to the specifics of the issue in just a moment. But from a political standpoint, is this like a 1 or 2 day story? Does it have much?
Does it stick? It's definitely not 2 days. I don't know if it's 1 day.
Day and a half.
Yeah. I mean, public financing, this is such an inside baseball debate. Nobody cares. Nobody cares how campaigns raise their money unless you're raising money from, like, Colombian drug cartels or something like that. But this is all inside baseball. I mean, people are interested in what the two candidates have to say and their different competing visions on the issues of the day, not, you know, who's taking public financing and getting into the weeds and how the FEC works. I mean, it's just kind of it's a
Charles,
lot of white noise.
Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago.
I completely agree with that we've seen in the past that lots of money overrides any impact of the story, even when the story several years ago was new and important. But I think it tells you something kind of interesting about Obama, which is Obama has a hard-edged political side to him. He's not going to give up an advantage. I don't think mm-hmm. in any sense this was because, quote, talks broke down. I think what you did was all spin. What he said, what he was doing, was taking an advantage, and he's going to run with it.
Well, and the other thing, though, too, this advantage might not be as big as people think it is. Last month, they essentially raised about the same amount of money, and you have the RNC that has considerably more money to devote to the race than the DNC does. So, you know, I agree that it's Obama taking advantage. Lindsey Graham read his answer on that questionnaire on Meet the Press today. It was nothing like what you just described. It said, I will accept public financing.
Now, one of the things that was discussed on the shows today, there was a reference to an article written by a columnist, David Brooks. In fact, they talked about the high-minded, the Dr. Barack, and then he talked about the Fast Eddie. He was referencing Fast Eddie Verdoliak, a legendary alderman in the city of Chicago.
Who was under indictment.
Right. And this is a name that people in Chicago know, but they may not know it around the country listening to our show. Are you suspecting, because we do this show from Chicago, you all live in Chicago, mm-hmm. do you expect that at some point in this campaign, and maybe it has already begun, that looking at Chicago and its reputation for the way we do business politically in Chicago, is that going to be a piece of this story, and are they going to try to tar Barack Obama with that in any significant way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're going to tie him to quote-unquote Chicago-style politics, just like they tried to tie Nancy Pelosi to, you know, San Francisco liberal values. And we've seen time and time again, especially in the special elections, that, you know, those types of broad generalizations and impugning kind of the myth of an entire city upon a single candidate just doesn't work, because the voters see, you know, they saw the work that Nancy Pelosi brought to the table. And this idea of, you know, San Francisco values just didn't work. And I think, again, if they try and paint him as this typical Chicago politician, I don't think that's going to work.
Well, I mean, it's not exactly a stretch. You know, a guy who raised, I can't remember what the last calculation was, it was $150,000, $160,000, Tony Resco, who is, you know, political financier to the Democratic stars in this state, did just get convicted of 16 federal corruption charges. He's the guy that Barack Obama had his kind of sweetheart house deal with, which has made national news, and a lot of people have picked up on it. So, I mean, it's definitely part of the story. This is the milieu from which Obama sprang, and how did he spring up through the ranks here to the position of U.S. Senator, and who's backing him? One of the things I just got to say, too, because on this money thing, you know, everybody's talking about, oh, Obama, he's not taking money from lobbyists, and it's all about little contributions from, you know, Enid in South Dakota sending her $10 in. It's nonsense. This is a guy who is being backed by all of the Chicago machine financiers in this state. That's where he got to start. Penny Pritzker is having on July 2nd, is having a $28,000 dinner, private dinner with him, headlined by Warren Buffett for him. So, I mean, this is the same old.
But this idea that, of course, he's raising big money. And just like John McCain was able to catch up with Barack Obama last month, because he had two or three big money fundraisers every single day, you know, $5,000, $10,000 a plate. But the idea being that Barack Obama's average donation still remains $88. That is his average donation.
I think that Charles. The key issue is that they will not be able to effectively tag Obama with any of the corruption in Chicago. And if they tag him as being actually a politician rather than somebody who sort of flies high above it, I don't think that that hurts him. So unless there's a lot more that we hadn't heard about, I don't think they get him with that. I think that what you have to do if you're McCain is make your priorities. And I think that the two priorities will be he's too liberal on a whole range of issues, and he won't protect you. And I think that we know what Obama's going to say against McCain, but I think that the issue that he's corrupt is not only wrong, I just think it's a loser.
I want to talk about how both sides will attack this particular campaign, looking at the strategy, looking at some of the battleground states, and also looking at really the first major decision they're going to have to make, and it's going to be made, you know, in the not-too-distant future, and that is, who do they want to sit and be a heartbeat away from the presidency? That's a very key issue. You not only have to, you know, have a relationship with that person, him or her, but you also, you're basically saying to the American people, hey, if something happens to me, this is the person I want to head this country. Big decision. We'll talk about it. 1-800-723-8289. From coast to coast and border to border, every Sunday night, I'm Bruce Dumont.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Lansing, Michigan to Lansing, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Charles, during the break, you asked one of the questions that I think a lot of people would like to get an answer to, and that is whether or not Barack Obama is moving away from sort of some of the left-of-center causes. And you're with the Daily Cause, one of the leading liberal bloggers in the United States. I mean, do you sense that he's backing away from you and MoveOn.org in any way?
No, absolutely not. And I think what we've seen, you know, during the primary, I think, you know, because it was so focused between him and Hillary Clinton, and the blogs themselves were divided, and there was a great debate about which candidate to choose, we saw both candidates kind of take a hands-off approach. I don't think they wanted to get into what we refer to online as flame wars and blog wars. But, you know, now that everything has settled down a little, we have seen a concerted effort to engage the blogs more, especially in terms of treating them as if they were traditional media in the same
Let me ask you a question, if you don't mind. We know that the right and its spokespeople have been pretty harsh on McCain. Some of them are now coming back to him. Some of them have stood off. Coasts, Move On, those are the two really prominent internet presences on the left. Do you have any differences with Obama?
Oh, of course.
What are the most prominent differences?
I think anybody who reads the front page of our site over the last few days knows how on his support of the recent FISA compromise, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. I mean, he was skewered throughout the web for his position on that, because obviously we would prefer not having at all telecom immunity, and Barack Obama sees it as, well, this is at least better than nothing.
But I thought he's also said that he wants to go after telecom immunity later.
Well, that's the great thing about Obama is whatever your position is, he agrees. you're for renegotiating NAFTA just like he was. We were going to scrap NAFTA in the primary. Now we're not going to scrap NAFTA. Now we're just going to tweak it on the margins to try to get labor environmental standards.
I find it funny now that we're talking about Barack Obama as kind of taking hypocritical or dual positions when it's been McCain that's been.
Well, we can talk
Maverick,
about. I'm happy to talk about McCain, but let's be honest about Barack Obama. Barack Obama is the darling of Daily Kos and the Netroots, except now he's a free market guy, baby. I'm for the free market, right? What's going on? This is more evolution of Barack Obama. He's on every side of every issue because he understands that his power is being a Rorschach ink blot for people not taking positions.
I don't think that that's it. I think it's the idea of, you know, our political discourse doesn't have to be split into yes or no or black and white. And he does bring a nuance to the issue, and that's the part. That's the great part of being part of a Democratic Party that doesn't have a purity troll sense in the sense of, I'm not going to agree with Barack Obama 100% on an issue. Neither will our readers.
You think Daily Kos is known for its nuance? You think Daily Kos is known mainly for its nuance?
No, we're a partisan. We're an absolutely partisan site. Absolutely.
But here's what I want to find out. First of all, I want to talk about some of the Obama vice presidential choices. Then we're going to do the McCain choices. But looking at some of the Obama choices, and I'm going to run through the names quickly, and then I'm going to ask you a question, Georgia. Sure. The names that are being mentioned most frequently: Hillary Clinton, Senator Jim Webb, Tim Kaine, the governor of Virginia, Ted Strickland, the governor of Ohio, Kathleen Sebelius, the governor of Kansas, Claire McCaskill, the senator from Missouri, Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, Joe Biden from Delaware, Sam Nunn, a name that's come on a lot in the last week. It's a rising name. The former senator from Georgia, very conservative, Ed Randell, the governor of Pennsylvania, Evan Bayh, the senator from Indiana, Chuck Hagel, the Republican senator from Nebraska, Wes Clark, former head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and Tom Daschle from South Dakota. Now, my question to you, we're going to keep that list up there, but let me ask you, Georgia, as a member of the blogging left, who would you eliminate? Who comes off? Who are absolute no choices? Because I've heard that Sam Nunn is one of those names some on the left and some of the leaders in the gay community have come out against.
Well, his obviously it would certainly not be at the top of the list for progressives. But obviously, I think the one name that we can automatically knock off is Chuck Hagel. I mean, he may be, you know, good on the war, but that's about it. He has a very strong conservative voting record, and I think the idea that he would be vice president on one of the most progressive Democratic tickets that we've seen is a little bit ridiculous.
Anybody else
to knock off?
Yeah, I mean, is there anybody that you would veto? Just say, you know what? If he picks this guy, he's in trouble with me and my left colleagues.
Well, you know, I think that all of these candidates, I mean, obviously Jim Webb was a Netroots candidate, so there's a lot of support for him on the Netroots, as there is for Claire McCaskill and Bill Richardson, and Biden is always a Netroots favorite. So this idea that, you know, obviously there's different gradations of support for all of them, but I think the key idea being that, you know, a Hagel obviously would be viewed as a slap in the face to the progressive community.
All right, let's go and take some calls. Let's go to Charles listening to us in Manhattan on XM Radio, POTUS 130. Go ahead, Charles. Nice to hear from New York.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
I wanted to give you, hopefully I can squeeze this in 40 seconds. I wanted to give you the list of the 10 characteristics I think Obama needs to look for in a vice president, and then you simply determine which candidates have, you know, can count. Most of those in their resume.
Right.
These are the number one, electoral college strength. Number two, ideological balance. Number three, foreign policy and defense expertise. Number four, bipartisan and inclusive. Number five, executive experience. Number six, appeal to white blue-collar workers. Number seven, reinforces Obama's theme of change in a new generation. Number eight, balances Obama's perceived lack of age and experience. Number nine, appeals to lower-income, lower-educated white women. And number 10, appeals to Latinos. Now, obviously, you won't get a candidate that fits all those categories, but you're looking for whatever candidate fills most of those categories.
Charles,
I think it provides a useful starting point.
No, it's a great starting point. Now, let me ask you, I'm going to turn the tables on you, because I'm sure you've given it, anyone that's given it this much thought, you put some names associated with this.
Guilty.
Who would be the three that in your view, either pass all the tests or most of the points you made?
Okay. Well, I had five. Two of them got eliminated for various reasons. So I would say Cleland, Edwards, and Strickland.
Cleland. Max Cleland is not on the list I just gave, but again, a former senator from Georgia.
In what sense does Edwards balance?
He's got military, foreign policy, and military expertise. He's got seniority. He's got experience. He's got gravitas.
What Edwards is a kind of puzzler to me because he seems to violate most of your rules. He doesn't have much. He doesn't have any foreign policy experience. He hadn't administered a two-car funeral. Well, I mean, what's his?
Certainly, no problem. He reinforces Obama's theme of change and a new generation. He's the youngest and most charismatic of the candidates. He appeals to white blue-collar workers. He demonstrated that before he quit. And he also, I mean, those were the two qualifications from my point of view that kept him in there. And he also has demonstrated strength in the Electoral College in some of those industrial states like Michigan and Ohio.
Ted Strickland?
Well, let me get to Strickland in a second. Survey USA showed that if you add Edwards to the ticket, he helped Obama significantly outside the margin of error in Michigan and Ohio. Now, with regards to Ted Strickland, I did not include Strickland because of Ohio, because most of the recent polls actually show the trend going towards Obama. I don't think, believe it or not, he's going to need help in Ohio. I think Michigan's going to be a tougher state. Strickland I included in my finalists because of his age, because of his executive experience, and because of his demonstrated ability to appeal to white blue-collar voters in his own home state.
This is one of the smartest set of comments I've heard. I've been on the show for a long time. You had a whole set of reasons. You articulated them very well. I certainly couldn't do any better than that.
He's excellent.
Thank you.
Listening to us on XM Radio. Nice to have you with us. Did you want to make a comment?
Oh, I was just going to bring up the point that he brought up later in his call, that the recent polling shows that with Edwards on the ticket, Barack Obama just surges in some of these key battleground states.
Okay. Let's go to Bill in Scranton, Pennsylvania. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Bruce, that's a tough act to follow, but I'll try. First of all, Chuck Hagel's name came up, and I thought, boy, what a great vice president. But he's not going to hand the vice presidency to a Republican. But he would make a great Secretary of Defense, and it would comply with his idea of an Abraham Lincoln-style cabinet, and it would appeal to the conservatives. I think he'd reach out to Bloomberg. Biden would be naturally Secretary of State and Webb. The other thing, if anybody saw the debate between Biden and Lindsey Graham on Meet the Press today, you saw the election. It was basically the same baloney we heard for 8-12 years from the Republicans, and an intelligent conversation. And that is what Obama is having with the American people right now, an intelligent conversation. The other thing I would quickly mention is temperament, age, tax cuts while we're waging a war. This guy, McCain, is in a league with Bush, that he's tied to his hip, and that's essentially, I think the Republicans are staring a tsunami in the face, and they don't even know what to do.
Let's let Dan Propp respond.
Well, I don't know. There's all kinds of curious comments that were made. I mean, one, the idea that Chuck Hagel would be something appealing to conservatives, I would dispute that regardless of position. Number two, you know, again, this is the typical kind of Obama fodder that we hear. He's having an intelligent conversation with the nation. But then when you ask, what's the intelligent part of it? What is it that you just can't wait for Obama to do? What are the policy ideas that are drivers in the Obama campaign? What do you think that the first five things he's going to do as president are? Where has he bucked his party and showed an independent streak of critical
People
thinking the way that McCain has done? I mean, look, I've got problems with McCain. I certainly don't agree with him. I'm probably in the 70% category with McCain, maybe 60. But the idea that the Democrats, if you don't think the Republicans are going to be able to tie Obama to corruption, Charles, the idea that the Democrats are going to convince the American people that McCain is a third Bush term, that McCain is not his own guy. Godspeed to you, my friend.
But he's right about the tsunami. Everything that we know about what's going to happen in the House and the Senate elections and in the state houses and the rest looks like a huge Democratic year, unless there's some extraordinary event, a terrorist attack or something awful that occurs. Everything that we know means that anybody who's running for president is swimming against a very rapid stream.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. Lots of callers on the line. 1-800-723-8289. The best informed talk show audience in America. Every Sunday night on Beyond the Beltway. You've heard it already tonight. Back shortly. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. We'll be right back. From Austin, Texas to Worcester, Massachusetts, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our liberal tonight is Georgia Logothetis. She is one of the country's leading bloggers. She's with the Daily Kos. She's one of the managing editors, and also you're a lawyer in private practice when you're not blogging away on the internet. Also joining us this evening is Dan Proft. He's a conservative activist, and he is also a commentator for WLS Radio, our flagship station, with Don Wade and Roma. And also joining us this evening is Charles Upson, the pride of Marks, Mississippi, a veteran political scientist from the University of Chicago. We thank you all for joining us tonight. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Jim in South Elgin, listening to us on WLS. You're on the air.
Good evening. Good conversations as usual.
Thanks.
I saw a little Barack Obama sticker. It says Obama, you know, talks about change, and that's all you're going to have by the time he gets done with his economic policies in the United States. That being aside, it's interesting to hear him talk about flip-flopping when McCain has finally come to some common senses when it deals with energy policy, and yet you know, it's okay for him to accuse McCain, but he does the same thing himself, so it's kind of hypocritical.
Well, so, I mean, honestly, here's where I'll try and show my own ability to critically think and be independent. McCain's sort of come to some common sense on his recasting his energy policy and allowing for drilling on the continental shelf. He still is opposed to drilling in Anwar, which makes no philosophical but it makes no philosophical difference based on the rationale, the correct rationale he's using to support drilling on the continental shelf, where we have we could increase our production by 40%, according to some industry estimates, and be against Anwar as he was 13 years ago. So, you know, this is where McCain. You know, I think McCain struggles to have an overall worldview and philosophy that's consistent, and so he's the kind of classic guy that John Maynard Keynes talked about when he said, "When circumstances change, I change my mind."
I want to follow up because, you know, we talked about Obama. Obama is going to, for all intents and purposes, is likely to make his choice for running mate first. The Democratic convention is going to be first. It doesn't mean that McCain can't surprise and do it before Minneapolis, but it's probably not, if it hasn't happened yet, it's not likely to probably be in that way. So my question to you is, we look at the list of McCain vice presidential choices. Does McCain have an opportunity to demonstrate some newness, some freshness, some thinking beyond the box? And let me run through some of the names that have been mentioned on McCain's list. Charlie Crist, the immensely popular governor of Florida, he was profiled today in the New York Times. Bobby Jindal, a very young man, the newly elected governor of Louisiana. Rob Portman, the former congressman from Ohio. Tim Pawlenty, the young, attractive governor of Minneapolis, who's made a number of public appearances in the last several weeks on some of the Sunday morning talk shows representing the McCain campaign. Mitt Romney, who he bested for the nomination, as did he best Mike Huckabee, who's hanging around, and Joe Lieberman, whose name has been mentioned on a number of occasions. They're close personal friends, and also someone else who was tried out on the Sunday morning shows today, and that is the immensely popular former governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Ridge. And so let me ask you, Charles, on this list, and by the way, you may want to add a few names to this list. These are the big eight whose names are mentioned most frequently by the great mentioners. is there anybody on this list that becomes, wow, this could make people think of McCain in a different way? Does it expand his voting base in any way with any of these names?
Let me tell you what I think he has to do when he picks. And then I think some of these names, the Huckabees and Jindals, are an attempt to signal to the right. I don't think that they're serious names. I don't think that they will be on the final list. And I think that the problem that McCain really faces is a very different problem in selecting a VP from the one that Obama faces. McCain has, given his age, given the fact that he's had cancer, he has to select somebody who looks to the American people like he or she is ready to govern on day one, should that be necessary. I think that in the end, there are only four names that are serious on the list: Crist, Portman, Romney, and Pawlenty. I don't know, but my hunch...
You wouldn't put Tom Ridge in that list?
No. Tom Ridge was an extremely ineffective secretary Homeland Security. He was not very good. He sort of looks good on paper, I suppose, but he didn't do much of a job there. Maybe people don't know that, but in fact, he wasn't very. It's a very difficult job to blend in all those agencies. My hunch is it'll be Romney, on the grounds that Romney's already been thoroughly vetted and is a prodigious fundraiser and will help McCain on the idea that he can run the economy. I think Portman and Crist would be excellent choices. Crist could possibly swing Florida. Portman is an extremely experienced guy in terms of actually governing. He's played central roles in the executive branch. He would be excellent.
Not to mention being U.S. Trade Representative.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. Exactly.
Look at it again. Put your conservative Republican hat on. Is there anyone here that would be a wow pick on this list?
Well, I mean, it might be a wow in terms of surprising. I don't know. I mean, for conservatives, I think a lot of these folks are somewhat known quantities, so I don't know that you're going to knock somebody's socks off. But I disagree with Charles. I don't think it's going to be Romney. I don't think it should be Romney either. I still think I know we had this conversation last week, but you know, I'm convinced of the argument that you've made for Huckabee. I think Huckabee deserves to be serious. I'm not saying that it will be McCain's choice, but I think he deserves to be serious for the electoral assistance that he could provide McCain. And I think if he doesn't go that way, then he goes to the point Charles was making before about somebody young, bright, articulate, looking like they can go on day one. And then I think you're talking probably about Tim Pawlenty.
Your reaction?
I would agree actually a little bit with both of them. I do think that certain names like, you know, Bobby Jindal, you know, is off the list. I mean, he's just being bandied about just for the sake of, you know, throwing a little bit of change out there. But, you know, the idea of having him as vice president, it would just completely take away what most people believe is McCain's strongest argument, which is Barack Obama's inexperience. Because then Barack Obama can obviously turn around and say, well, you're calling me inexperienced, but the man who's a heartbeat away from the presidency, you know, looks like he's student class vice, you know, president.
That's an excellent point. Excellent.
And another problem with Jindal is, you know, recently writings have come out where he participated in exorcisms, and there's just, you know, an unknown past there, and I think that it's just being floated
around
because
it's fun. And he's not been attacked
by
the devil, though. I mean, it seems to have worked.
Right. Right.
I do think, though, that Mike Huckabee, I completely agree with Dan, you know, deserves to be at least discussed seriously, because the one thing that's sorely missing from McCain's campaign, and this was clearly evident during that atrocious speech with the green background, is any sort of energy level. His campaign looks like it's absolutely dead. Huckabee brings that to the table. You know, when he comes into a room, he brings that energy level and that vibrancy. And I think that that alone may be something that can help reinvigorate McCain's campaign.
What about the ability to bring a state that you absolutely must win, like Florida? Now, again, Charlie Crist is a moderate, some would say even a progressive Republican. Do you view him that way? Do you view him as a positive or as a negative? In the New York Times today, you know, they brought up a lot of old stories, you know, that, you know, he was married 30 years ago. They brought up some of those rumors, certainly, you know, in the insinuation of the questioning about his personal life. I mean, could he withstand a proctoscopic, you know, journalistic investigation?
That's awful,
that's
Bruce.
What you get.
I don't want to get that close to Charlie Crist, but I don't think it's a positive negative with him. I think it's an irrelevancy. I think McCain is going to win Florida, I don't see the play for Crist.
Does it appear then that it almost is a weakness that he has to put somebody from Florida on?
Well, it makes no sense to me. That play makes no sense to me. If you the real concern, and to our previous conversations about Huckabee, is you want evangelicals to come out. You want to make sure you button down some of those southern states that could be swing states like Arkansas and Tennessee. I mean, so Huckabee makes sense. Maybe even Mark Sanford makes sense because he has a little bit of Tim Pawlenty quality too in terms of young and executive experience. But Crist makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. And Pawlenty?
Yeah, he makes some sense.
More sense than Crist.
Does he put Minnesota in the winning column?
I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
And in fact, the most of the studies show that the only time in modern history that the vice presidential choice has played a role in carrying a state was under Kennedy, that Johnson played the key role in carrying Texas. It's always talked about, and it's conceivable. I actually think when we talk about Obama's vice presidential candidates, that a vice presidential candidate from Pennsylvania, and now both candidates are thinking, right? You mentioned Ridge on the Republican side, but Rendell will be thought of on the Democratic side. That could play a role.
Let's go to St. Joe, Michigan. Ron is listening to us on WLS. Are you there?
Oh, Bruce?
Yeah, Ron, go ahead.
Yeah, Bruce, I wanted to talk about the Verdoliak connection to Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Verdoliak was a totally different political creature than Obama. Verdoliak was a racist, number one. We know that with his attacks on Harold Washington and his administration. And he was a hoodlum. He wasn't even a Democrat. He was a Republican. He went to the Cicero Republican Party, and there's allegations that he was part of the Cicero mob. So and David Brooks is nothing but an intellectual smear artist carrying water for the New York Times conservative faction. And he's not read in the Midwest anyway. That's a New Yorker, you know, Boston, Washington clique over there anyway. So and Brooks has no knowledge of the machinations of the political party of Chicago. So that smear is going to go nowhere.
All right, let's let Dan respond.
It's ironic to call David Brooks a smear artist when, what did you say, mob, hoodlums, racist? how many smears did you get into that 30-second bit?
We got to move on. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back with more calls in a moment.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
Bruce Dumont back. Let's head to Muncie, Indiana, where Curtis is listening to us on WoWo. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I was just going to comment because somebody had mentioned that the public financing issue wasn't likely to sort of drive people's votes one way or the other. And
right.
I figured that, you know, for a conservative, it's not, and for a liberal, it's not, but they've already got their minds made up. But I'm an independent because I'm fundamentally uncomfortable with the agendas of both parties. And I like McCain and Obama from the beginning. You know, on policy alone, I gave McCain a slight edge, but I was sort of willing to override moderate advantage and, you know, his experience, well, basically because of the historical nature of Obama's candidacy. I, you know, like to see African-American president, and I think it has symbolic importance, but, I mean, I never abandoned McCain intellectually. I kind of defended him when I thought he was getting attacked from both the right and the left, but a week ago, I would have said I had, you know, it was like 85% likely to, I was going to vote for Obama, but the public financing thing is kind of a game changer for me. I strongly believe in trying to lessen the influence of money in elections, and plus, I mean, kind of an, even more important than that, perhaps, is that in the average race, my tiebreakers are usually, you know, competence, bipartisanship, and integrity. I mean, competence, you kind of have to look at experience. Bipartisanship on Obama's part, it seems all to have been rhetoric, really, and, you know, this speaks to integrity.
Well, if I may jump in, I understand that you said that this, you know, Barack Obama's position on public financing was a game changer, but then what do you make of the fact that McCain, whose name is on the McCain-Feingold bill, also chose not to participate in public financing? Because obviously, and I completely understand where you're coming from in the sense of, you know, you want politics to be open and transparent, and if you support a public financing system, then certainly it's your prerogative to vote against Barack Obama on that front. But then why is that also not considered a negative against John McCain?
Are you talking about in the primary?
I'm talking about in the general election.
Well, my understanding is that he's still going to go ahead and take the public finance. He's going to be limited to, what is it,
84 million.
4 million, yeah.
Here's my thing on public financing. I respect your position. I think you're in the minority, but in terms of even among independents, that being a game-changing issue. But I'm gonna, this issue drives me crazy because both sides are lying. Okay, anytime public financing goes, the conversation goes to public financing, I give the definitive statement on money and politics as delivered by P.G. O'Rourke, which is, as long as buying and selling is controlled by legislation, the first thing to be bought and sold will be legislators. So the idea that, you know, we're going to extract money from politics or some groups are appeal to special interests and the Republicans don't or the Democrats do, both sides are awash in it because government is too big, too powerful, has too many goodies to give out. So we're looking at the system inputs rather than the system outputs, and that's why this issue is a complete straw man.
Even if people take your position on public financing, that is that they wish that both sides did it, I think it's overridden by the fact that Obama thinks that he can just put many more ads on TV, and that is get his word out.
Curtis, you said something that I want to ask you to follow up on and elaborate on. You said that it was important that because of the historical nature of the Obama campaign, you might lean towards that because of the significance of it. In your view, I trust that you're a Caucasian listener.
Yes.
All right. What would it mean to you to have an African-American president?
Well, I mean, it's not going to mean to me what it would if I were a minority, but I think that it would have a sort of healing symbolic aspect to it that would be sort of useful to the way people dealt with each other outside of politics.
Do you think there would be any impact in that vein, Dan Proft? I mean, would life... relations between black and white America, would it change if Barack Obama was elected president?
Well, I think it's inevitable that would usher in some changes, certainly some changes in the debate. I think a lot of it, that's an open question, because were Obama to be elected, I think a lot of it is what how he uses his bully pulpit as President of the United States, as leader of the free world, to have a conversation. And frankly, to this point, it's not been impressive. He's done the right thing only as a last resort. He said he's backed up these kind of amorphous hope change cliches with substance on this issue, on this thoughtful conversation, whether it be race or several other issues, only as a last resort. So I'm not encouraged to this point.
Charles? I actually am concerned about one thing, and that is if he were to lose, what would happen to the conversation? That is to say, would there be a lot of bitterness on the part of people who, not only minorities, but people who've strongly supported integration in the public sphere and so forth, saying that there'll be intensive polling to see how much race played a role in his loss. If it's a close race, as I expect it will be, and if he loses, then I think that you could have a real serious deterioration, Georgia, at least in the short term.
Yeah, and I do think that if he does lose, you know, the how he lost will be crucial in determining, you know, where race relations go forward in America. But going back to, you know, the unique position of having an African-American president, if we look to his speech on Father's Day, where he spoke to the African-American community about the problem of absentee fathers, no other candidate, you know, John McCain could not have made that speech. So the idea of having a candidate who can speak uniquely to the African-American community and to social problems or economic problems that they specifically face, I think will be a huge advantage.
Good point. Georgia Logothetis has been with us. She is with the Daily Kos. She is one of the country's leading liberal bloggers. Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago has joined us, as well as Dan Proft, our conservative commentator from our flagship station, WLS Radio in Chicago. Our phone lines are going to remain open for another full hour. If you're listening to us on radio, 1-800-723-8289. Lots of callers on the line. We'll bring them into our conversation. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit GoRedForWomen.org.
Go Red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight, featuring commentary by liberal blogger Georgia Logothites from the Daily Kos, conservative commentator Dan Prof from WLS Radio in Chicago, and Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago via Marks, Mississippi. Phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289. We'll go back to calls shortly, but I do want to pick up on some conversation that we had during the news break, and we were following up on the last conversation of hour number one, and that is what changes if Barack Obama becomes president, or even his quest for the presidency, how will race relations be affected in any way? And Charles made the point that if Barack Obama should run and lose, there's a potential that it could be injurious, depending on the tone of the campaign, because there will be a lot of discussions. There'll be a lot of surveys as to why Barack Obama lost. I want to follow up on that conversation, but I want to, just for the sake of this conversation, I want to talk about what happens if Barack Obama is elected. Mm-hmm. What, in your view, will be the changes, or could the changes in the country be?
In terms of race relations?
Yes, in terms of the way we live our lives, what will the impact be on the average American?
Well, I think the impact on the average African American, let's start there, will be huge, because it's the sense of, well, this barrier that I've always thought about, you know, this kind of idea that, well, you know, America is never going to vote for a black man. Well, that was disproven. And I think that alone is going to be huge in the African American community, in the sense of, you know, a deep sigh of relief. We have this history, but we're not going to let it block us anymore, that there is a door open, and that, yes, we can put an African-American candidate in the White House.
This, yes, we can, that could work out as a campaign slogan.
That's kind of catchy.
In terms of, you know, how it will impact the dynamic between, you know, African-Americans and white people, I think that it will inform their relationship, in the sense of, we're going to be talking about race a lot more with a Barack Obama presidency. We're going to be talking about the type of problems that afflict the African American community a lot more with a Barack Obama candidacy. Because, as I said before, he has the ability to talk in a frank manner and touch issues which we usually don't bring up in political discourse, like he did with the absentee fathers. Maybe he'll branch out and bring up, you know, the education factor. Why do African Americans drop out at a higher rate than white students?
So is it likely to be? And again, Charles, we should mention again, you know, I mentioned that you grew up in Marks, Mississippi. You grew up, right, with a lot of African Americans. You live in a sector of the city that is heavily integrated now.
Right.
So you've spent a lot of time of your childhood and adult.
But when
living,
I was a kid, Bruce,
segregated?
The world was segregated, but changing rapidly when I was in high school. So I've seen one of the great historic changes in our country over the last 40 or 50 years.
This discussion that Georgia just referenced,
right,
I think that a dialogue can be a positive thing. But if a dialogue is perceived to be a diatribe,
mm-hmm,
it can be negative.
That's right.
It's going to be a very difficult thing, I think, for the black community and the white community to have this discussion. There's going to have to be a lot of sensitivity, and mistakes may be made, well-intentioned mistakes, but mistakes can be made in this discussion, which conceivably could make things worse.
You put your finger right on it. I would say a couple of other things. I would say that that Obama initially ran as a post-racial candidate. It's only when the Reverend Wright and Trinity Church stuff came up that he was forced to address racial issues, and he went back and did it. It was not a courageous thing that he did. He did it in extremis, under tremendous pressure. The second thing I would say is that a lot of the big issues are around questions like what to do with the education system. I've never heard, maybe there's material that I don't know, but it will be interesting to see if Obama is willing to face up to the adults who run the system and stand for the children who need more choice, who need more ability to get into good schools. He has not been noted for that. He's been very close to teachers' unions. He's been very close to a lot of these things. So the question is not
but
just...
Does he believe, however, because I agree with you that having that conversation is an important discussion to have, but I think when he has his conversations as he did on Father's Day, and he's had those conversations on several occasions throughout this campaign, most notably recently in Texas before the Texas primary, where he's talking about cultural issues, responsibility. Isn't that if he can do nothing else but change the attitude and the mindset? Isn't that a greater contribution? Because the issue of the schools, there is some political downside to that. But isn't necessarily political downside about some of the cultural issues.
Right. You know, God forbid that he take on anything that might have political downside. I mean, he wants to be on the 100% issues, talking about clean air and clean water.
But you've
got
to decide you've got to decide which discussion to have first. I don't believe you can have one without the other. If it suddenly becomes a discussion and becomes a debate between the teachers and the teachers union, and it's all about teachers, it seems to me that you're missing the point that you have too many families without fathers. Well, you have too many children having children. Nothing to do with teachers unions.
Wait a second. First of all, he isn't Charles. Hit the nail on the head talking about his discussions about race were something that were hoisted upon him because of the Reverend Wright. It's not like he came out and said, okay, part of what I want to do is have this intelligent, thoughtful conversation on race and engage the country. He did it. He did the right thing, as usual, as he does, as a last resort, not as a first principle.
But
big difference. Wait a second. On the stuff about unwed mothers and fathers not being around, I mean, Bill Cosby is talking about that for the last five years.
This is a political
Dan Quayle. Leader Dan Quayle was excoriated and ridiculed when he brought this issue up 15, 20 years ago. I'm not saying that it's not good for him to do it. I think it's great to hear Obama talk to that issue. It's great when he says, you know what? Hey, you're looking at a Harvard-educated attorney. Education is cool. In the black community, we need to make sure that our kids understand education is cool, graduate from high school is cool. That's great when he says that. The problem is, especially when we're talking about the President of the United States, the problem is that rhetoric is backed up with zero action. In fact, the action runs exactly contrary to the rhetoric, as evidenced by the 12,000 kids in failing schools in his former state senate district in Illinois. For 7 years, he said nothing about schools in this state. When he was a state senator,
I just want to really quick touch
on the timing of the race issue speech. I mean, yes, he was running as a post-racial or non-racial candidate, and had he made that race a central issue of his campaign in the first place, then conservatives like you and the media would be pounding on the table and saying, why is he running as a black candidate? So it was a crucial to his strategy.
He's running a Democratic primary. What does he care what conservatives like me have to say?
Well, it would have been an issue as to, well, he's running as a black candidate, and maybe that's the only way that he can win.
Is there something he can do as a candidate for president of the United States? Is there something that he can do to deal with a real live issue like violence? Chicago has had one of the most violent years in our history. Over, I believe, 30 public high school students have been killed this year. We had four just this past week. I mean, is there something that, as a candidate for president of the United States, is there a message that he can communicate now, before the convention? Is there something he can and should communicate? Use all this political capital he has now. Is it time? Can he do it now? I want to get everybody's reaction to that. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Georgetown, Texas to Georgetown, Massachusetts, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. And speaking of Georgetown, let us go to Georgetown, Texas, where Homer's listening to us on KLBJ. And Georgetown, is it Southwestern University that's in Georgetown?
Yes, sir. The oldest university in the state of Texas.
Yes, I have been there. You have a lovely town, and it's nice to hear from you tonight.
It's a beautiful college.
How can we help you?
I was calling about the Barack Obama speech for Father's Day when the lady said it seemed like he was the only one that can give it.
Yes.
And what I want to know is, why did it take him 20 years? He's been sitting in that church for 20 years listening to crap, and now he wants to...
Well, make your point.
Sure. I mean, I don't understand the connection between, you know, his religion or how he's, you know, what church he participated in for 20 years versus, you know, the type of personal responsibility he was advocating with his Father's Day speech. But he is speaking not, and I think a key thing is when he made that speech, it wasn't, while it addressed issues that are unique, let's say, to the African-American community, it wasn't just to African-Americans. It had a broad appeal. He spoke about personal responsibility to parents to be more involved in their children's lives. So I think that while he was speaking to an African-American audience and touching on issues that were relevant to them, it had a much broader appeal.
And by the way, he has given similar speeches in the past, sir. I think your point is that maybe this was the only time he has uttered those words. It is not the only time he's uttered those words. He's done it a number of times in the campaign.
It seems like that I have not ever heard anything about him going out and trying to get the young kids or whatever to, come in line and
well, I mean, he did work as a community organizer.
What is a community organizer, by the way?
The point is someone who organizes a community.
Oh,
by the way, by the way, Homer, let me just mention that, Barack Obama is now a well-known individual, so obviously you're a little more aware of what he's doing now than previous times. But I will tell you that, I mean, there have been numerous times that Barack Obama has made a speech like that. And also, I might say, is there have been numerous times over the last 20 years that Jesse Jackson has made a similar speech.
And however, ironically.
And there are many, yes, and there are many times over the last 30 years that Louis Farrakhan, Minister Louis Farrakhan, a very controversial figure, and everybody knows all the controversial things that he's said, but personal responsibility and fathers being fathers first and getting married and having children in that order, which I think 99% of the people listening to this program would applaud. Those are things that Louis Farrakhan has said as well. Again, we don't hear it as much, but again, these are messages. I think one of the points is that message is still, even if you have two or three people that are delivering it, this is a message that's got to be delivered over and over and over and over and over again for decades before it will sink in.
And it's unambiguously a good thing that Barack Obama did it, and he's in a unique position to do it as in his current running for president.
But I think it says something about his candidacy that we're congratulating him for doing something so obviously right and so non-controversial at this late stage in the campaign. Big deal. You're right, he should do it. You're right, he's good doing it. Well, it's good that he's doing it, but big deal.
He did it earlier in the campaign. He's getting more publicity for it now, but he has addressed those issues earlier in the campaign.
And it was Father's Day.
Michelle.
What's he supposed to do?
Michelle, you're on the air calling from Gurnee, Illinois. You're on the air.
Hi. I have notes here. I'm trying to come across clear-headed because I'm just getting so upset. But the gentleman from Texas summed it up pretty well, as did the panelist who just said big deal. First of all, the woman on the panel is proving the point that there will be more division with Barack. Saying that we're going to be speaking about black Americans, why are we not talking about Americans and oil and security? Why are we talking about black versus white, and why can only Barack talk about it? That is absurd to elect somebody simply because it would be a cool thing to do at this time in history is selfish and childish. It's racist to elect him simply because he's black, and I'm sick of it.
I don't think anybody has said that they're, at least on this panel, that they're going to be
voting. My children who are 9 and 11 have said, that is racist, saying that he should be elected just because he's black.
No,
they pick up on it. They pick up on it. They see through it. And it's like a movie being scripted. He's nothing.
I said a couple of weeks ago on this program that one of the great disservices that I think the news media can do during this campaign is that they will dwell on it.
Exactly.
They will dwell on it. And as they dwell on it, they do everything with a heavy hand. And so what should be a legitimate discussion, a viable discussion, of which I think Barack Obama has a lot to add to the discussion, because he does have a unique perspective with his biracial parents. He is unique. That is a unique perspective he can bring to the discussion.
I just want to say one more thing.
Let me just finish. But what happens is the media has a heavy hand, and what will start as a discussion will be perceived as a diatribe.
True.
And that will create resentment, and that will be a backlash against the very thing the news media would like to see happen.
Exactly.
Because everything they do with a heavy hand.
A lot of Barack Obama's campaign surrogates also have that heavy hand.
Well, Barack Obama himself obviously has And he's come out and said, I do not want people to vote for me because of my race. And his campaign was post-racial. And going to the issue that the caller said, his entire campaign speaks to One America, and his entire campaign speaks to instituting policies that will affect all Americans and especially middle-class Americans.
Definitely. One more badly.
Michelle, last word to Michelle.
Okay, last real quick. I think the gentleman on the panel, and I don't even know where he stands. I mean, I can guess politically, but he summed it up. Big deal. Of course you should apologize for a lunatic at your church. You know, I mean, my God. Big deal.
Okay. Oh, my God is correct.
Thanks very much. Sam, on the northwest side of Chicago, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm going to be echoing this, but I firmly believe this white liberal blogger who you have on your panel actually believes that black men in this country don't know the right thing to do. Me, as a white man on the northwest side of Chicago, believes that every black man in the city of Chicago, in this country, knows what the right thing to do. And they don't need Father Flager or Barack Obama to tell them how to do it, or that the message is different if it comes out of Barack Obama's mouth rather than John McCain's mouth. And that's the problem here.
Georgia respond, but you know what? I disagree with your point, because it isn't just I disagree. I don't believe that every black man in America does know why am I saying it? It's because popular culture, the message from popular culture, is counter to what Barack Obama is saying.
Yeah,
it's counter to it.
Bruce, their mothers and their fathers have taught them what the right thing to do is, and they know the right thing to do.
No, they have not.
That's the racist thing to think, that they don't know the right thing to do.
No.
And they do. The black men I know the right how to raise their children. They don't need you or me or Barack Obama or Father Flager to pretend that we've got to lead them somewhere. They know where they're going. They know what's right and what's wrong. And that's the problem here. Big deal. And you know what? When I hear this community organizing, I think the best campaign commercials will be, go and look at the community he was organizing for the last 25 years, and you'll see what you don't want to happen to the United States of America. And he's got to be held accountable for that, because you can't just sit back and do nothing whatsoever while you have kids killing each other, terrible schools in your neighborhood, and no factories, you are responsible and accountable.
Let's let Georgia respond.
Well, Sam, thank you for putting words in my mouth. I'm going to try and take them out one by one now.
You did not say John McCain
the idea
could not deliver
being that.
Let's let her respond.
The idea being that, you know, and I think Bruce brought up the good point that, you know, speaking to the African-American community about this problem, of course, you know, I think that obviously it does a disservice to the debate to paint it with a broad brush in terms of, well, all African-Americans know this or all African-Americans don't know this. But it's true that everybody, family brings a unique circumstance to the table. And I think the key issue with the speech was not so much who he was speaking to, which obviously we discussed, but also the fact that it was the first time, you know, in a long time, that this actually became something that we discussed as a nation. You know, and Bill Crosby.
Oh. What are you talking about?
When Bill Crosby made those remarks.
How about Dan Quayle 20 years ago?
Dan Quayle, exactly. But every time that was done, it was controversial. I remember when Bill Crosby, it was like, you know, 24/7 news media.
Right. Obama gets the pass that Dan Quayle didn't. I mean,
no, it still is controversial. And the idea is it shouldn't be controversial. No, that goes back to what we were saying earlier.
It's not controversial. Everybody knows illegitimacy is not just a problem in the black community, it's a problem in the white community. It's a problem across the board, and it is tearing our social fabric.
Dan Moynihan raised this in a report around 1970 or so. Yeah. He was just excoriated for being a racist, for predicting essentially all the trends that we now know have happened. But I think that the discussion that's been going on gets at a tension that we just need to put out on the table, and that's a tension between organizing around the issue of victimization and organizing around the issue of taking personal responsibility. And I think that all this identity politics that's been built around victimization creates a problem, and I'm glad to see that Barack Obama's moving in the other direction.
We got to move on. Sam, thanks very much for your call. We appreciate it. 1-800-723-8289. Lots of calls. We'll hear from them when we roll on from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. From coast to coast and border to border, every Sunday night. Back shortly from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Salinas, Ohio to Sandusky, from Salinas, California to Sandusky, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Dan Proft is here. He's our conservative commentator. You can hear him in addition to this broadcast. You can hear him on with Don Wade and Roma. They do the mornings on our flagship station, WLS. Georgia Logothides is here. She is an attorney in private practice. However, she is one of the country's leading liberal bloggers with a daily cost. And what is your handle? What are you?
Georgia 10.
Georgia 10. And also joining us this evening is the ever popular Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. He is a professor of political science. How long have we
Mississippi one.
That's your handle.
How long have you been at the U of C?
Almost 30 years.
30 years.
Yeah. I've taught at London School of Economics and Harvard and some other places as well, but Chicago's my home.
So you're a pretty smart guy.
Name dropper.
Oh, I'm just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable.
Let us.
I can't even understand myself sometimes, Bruce.
Let us go to Ben, listening to us in Chicago on WLS. You're on Coast to Coast.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Let me just mention three things. When the New York Times wrote a series on Obama, they described discussions at the advisory committee level. They took up race, and within 5 minutes, Obama dispatched it and said it will not be a problem. Tonight on the national news, the Pew Report was listed, and they came out with two statistics. One, that 30% of their people said race would be a problem when it came to voting. 30% said age would be a problem. That would be with regard to McCain. You're assuming that Obama is that sensitive and perceptive. I don't think that's quite true. But let me put it in this fashion. Suppose Obama goes before Congress, he makes a speech, and the Republicans do not respond at all. Do you say that this is a question of issues, or do you say it's a question of race? He makes a mistake, and someone says, oh, well, what do you expect of an unqualified black? How will the black community react?
My sense is that if he is elected, it will be like what happened with Kennedy and the Catholics. That is, it will be seen as a ratification of complete mainstreaming in a certain way. Won't be that the problems don't continue to exist. They certainly will. But my sense is that the issues about who stands up and so forth won't be attributed to race. It'll be attributed to other kinds of things. I think the big problem would, in terms of discourse in the country on race and progress on race, would come if he's defeated.
I think also a point that you made before is that, you know, it we talked about the impact on the country, and Georgia made a point that, you know, a lot of African Americans would be very proud that someone from their background has made it, you know, all the way to the White House and did so, you know, within the public structure. You know, let me just finish my point, and then you can certainly add challenge it or add to it. My point is that just because Barack Obama, if he is elected president, that should not mean and should not be a signal to anyone, whether they're black or white, that suddenly their life is going to change instantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you are struggling and you're a mother of four and you're living below the poverty line, don't think that your life is going to change overnight, or suddenly they're going to stop shooting outside your house, or you're going to be able to go to school in Chicago uninterrupted and never have another shooting in the city of Chicago. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be that type of dramatic change. And one of the concerns is that some people will put so much hope into just having a black face in the White House that's going to be good enough. And I don't think it's going to be good enough. It's the beginning of a discussion. It's the beginning of solving a problem potentially, but it is not going to be a panacea.
And policies are key. And policies are going to be key. And policy, it's not just hope.
Right, and policies are going to be key, especially, too, for independents. Think about the possibility, which is a real possibility, of a Democrat-controlled Senate that is veto-proof, of a Democrat House that has a bigger majority than it currently has. And think about nationalizing 15% of our economy. Think about doubling our capital gains tax. Think about becoming Fortress America, protectionist country in when we have a global village with the rise of the other. As Fareed Zakaria calls them. I mean, it's that's the lack of discussion on policy and the just chasm of difference between McCain and Obama on these critical issues about this nation's future for black, white, and brown is really what's frightening so far in this campaign.
Ben, you had final word to you.
Okay. Obama, in his discussions, has indicated that he can deliver a bipartisanship, he can deliver a new world, he can deliver unity and harmony among people in our country. I think that you're going to find that the factor of race will come up time after time because he won't be able to, and excuses are going to have to be advanced, and I think the only ones that are going to satisfy some people are race. But we'll see.
Okay, listen, okay. Thanks for your call. And by the way, I think that if Barack Obama continues to make the point that he somehow is better qualified to be able to reach across the aisle and to demonstrate leadership in a bipartisan way, I think that is a weak suit. That's not a strong suit for him to carry, because I think when you compare him with John McCain and what John McCain has done, not just talked about doing, is I think it's night and day. Let's go to Bob, listening to us in Boise, Idaho, on KBOI. Nice to hear from Boise tonight.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good. Hey, after 20 years of activism on the south side of Chicago, how are things going back there?
You know,
it could be better.
May I jump in? Because
go ahead.
I mean, this idea that, you know, Barack Obama is this magical creature that can, you know, with one fell swoop of his hand, you know, either cure race relations in America.
Where did we ever get such an idea?
How is 20 years of his policies that he's proposing? How have they done on the south side of Chicago?
And the idea is, you know, it's not just Barack Obama, that the government is not composed, the state legislature obviously not composed of just Barack Obama.
Which is
the
all
idea
Democrats.
Being that he's one player within, you know, a wider sphere of government. That's not to say that, you know, he doesn't have accomplishments to his name or that he should have taken more action in circumstances. Of course, any politician could have done more for their specific neighborhood or their specific district. You know, if you're a politician, then I would say by definition, you're not doing everything you can do to help your community.
But Bob's point is that when you're coming out of the milieu of a political leadership on the south side of Chicago, they've had that area of the city mm-hmm. has had a Democrat member of Congress for probably over 80 years. They have had representation in the state Senate and in the state House for probably over 50 years.
They have leadership.
Including the leadership of the state Senate and, to some extent, the leadership even in the House, very strong in that mm-hmm. sector of the city. And you've looked at a public school system that is worse today than it was 20 years ago. Okay. You have deteriorating because of lifestyle changes. You have increased violence in those areas. There's not many measures of quality of life mm-hmm. in that sector of Chicago that is better today than it was 20 years ago. So, and most of the political leadership, almost universally, has been Democrat, left of center.
Well, do we blame quote-unquote Democrats, or do we blame the type of Democrats that were elected? Because I can probably point to
a district in
Texas that's very blood red that still has these problems. You know, it's a type of leaders that we elect.
I think we can say historically, and this goes back long before Barack Obama, I think we can say that a political conspiracy in Chicago to warehouse poor black people in high rises was a government experiment that was a horrible idea. It led to crime, violence, illegal children born out of wedlock, and a deterioration of the quality of life issues that came out of a political philosophy of the 1960s that was perpetuated by Democrats in Congress and the leadership of the city of Chicago and the General Assembly in Illinois.
The same Democrat and the same philosophy that Obama is proposing, when you get past the cadence to the substance, the same exact philosophy he is proposing today. The scariest statistic, and here's the thing, Barack Obama is not on the hook for CPS, for what's happened in the Chicago public school system, or what, more to the point, has not happened. But for 7 years he sat in the state Senate, he did nothing. He said nothing. He was carried around by the teachers' unions like a celebutant's cockapoo. And in the most, you want to hear a tragic statistic from Chicago Public Schools, and it's like this in a lot of other big urban school systems too. A study done in 2005 that actually measured outputs by the Consortium on Chicago Public School Research found that of every 100 freshmen that attend a Chicago public school system, 6 will go on to get a college degree. 6 in 100 spread over a universe of 400,000 kids. Those are death of civilization numbers. Those are permanent second-class citizen numbers. And Barack Obama said and did nothing about them.
Oh, so we're going to blame the entire failure of the Chicago public school
system. What did I just say? What did I just say? Don't recast what I said. What did I just say? It is not strictly.
That he said nothing?
It is not strictly his fault, of course. But he said and did nothing about it. He made no effort to do anything about it, and that is a crime.
Well, I mean, I would obviously vigorously disagree with that and state that, you know, he has taken very strong stances on education and the importance of, and he's directly stated that we need to get more and more people.
For example,
what are the stances that he's taken that will change things, in your opinion?
The key thing that he brought to the table was the fact that you can't just blame the teachers. Obviously, the problem of education is a comprehensive problem that has numerous facets. And one of the key things that he brought to the forefront was that the parents need to turn off the video games. I remember he said that in a speech. Yep. He says, you guys need to turn off the video games, get home early from work if you can.
So we don't blame the teachers, we blame the parents.
Looking into this problem of Chicago Public Schools, you're saying that his strong suit is that he thinks it's a complex problem. The teachers aren't fully responsible, and parents should cut off video games. That's his strong suit.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
No, obviously the strong suit is that he realizes it's a complex problem that isn't going to be solved by saying, "Well, everybody goes to a private school and that's it."
No, his children.
We're coming to you from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From Birmingham, Alabama to Albuquerque, New Mexico, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. We got people out there on America's highways and byways. Scott is listening to us on POTUS on XM Radio, and he's driving through Indiana. Nice to hear from you tonight, Scott. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
Your panelist suggested that it was no big deal when Barack Obama came out and made his politically expedient speeches and called his preacher of 20 years an obvious nutcase, something that it's obvious to the rest of us.
He didn't say that.
A direct quote? I don't recall that.
I don't think he said
that. Those are my words. But to me, it's obvious the guy is a nutcase. So, Barack, came out and finally said the obvious. Big deal. Well, it is a big deal, and I'll tell you why. Because the people who need to hear it, the people who need to understand it, and it needs to be spoken enough until they do understand it, aren't listening to your panelists and the callers who think in lockstep with your panelists. If Barack Obama does nothing else, he should do away. The mere fact that he is who he is and where he is should do away with the notion that black men can be nothing but thugs, rappers, or sports stars. And they need a black... They're not going to listen to me, Mr. White Guy, from the Midwest. Tell them that.
I agree.
Because they believe what they believe and what they've
Oh, I think that's right.
Believe,
I think that that's right. Yeah, that's, I think that's true, why Colin that's Powell and Condoleezza Rice and other prominent blacks and the people, who, Richard Parsons, who runs Time Magazine, I mean, you know, Time AOL, those kinds of things are very important. People need to be able to look up, and every ethnic group has done that.
Oh, but you know what the difference? You know what the difference is here?
Yeah, what?
Because the people you've just mentioned,
yeah,
they're not cool. Barack Obama is cool. Barack
That's
Obama
it.
Is cool. Let me just put this in context. He is cool to a generation of people who might be susceptible to a different message other than rap stars saying it's all right to screw any
point.
Woman that walks
That's
through the door.
That's an important okay. point. Absolutely.
Can I make one more comment?
Yes, go ahead.
It just occurred to me while I was listening to you guys, and it may be flip, and it might be pie in the sky, and maybe it's just my simpleton white guy thinking, but maybe Barack can be the father figure that black American youth needs, that has been missing in their
lives.
Well,
he can't be both cool and a father figure. That's going to be a problem.
You know, but
I know this from being a father.
But here's the other thing with that statement, too, and this goes to what you said before, Bruce, which is this whole idea, and part of it needs to be not, you know, whether you're a dorky white guy or a cool black guy or whatever, needs to be... people in leadership positions who have access to bully pulpits need to say, you know what, stop looking to a politician, even the President of the United States, for your salvation. Your life is not going to materially change, at least in the short term, and if it's Obama for president, not for the better. By who's elected president. You need to take ownership of your life. Forget this looking to the political system for your salvation. It's crazy. The father figure. He's going to be the father of our nation. For Republican, Democrat, I don't care. That is just poppycock.
We got to move on. Let's go to Don, listening to us in Park Forest, Illinois on WLS.
Gentlemen and ladies.
Yes.
You know, I'm my hometown is Gary, Indiana, and I voted for the first black mayor. I mean, so I have absolved myself of all this guilt, white guilt.
Richard Hatcher.
That's right. Richard
How'd that
Hatcher,
work out?
First
1968.
Black mayor of Gary, and that was in 1968, so that's 40 years ago.
Yep.
So, like I said, I have no compulsion to or need to vote for some black guy just because he's black. You know, and I really get a strong feeling that that's very much what the people want to do. They want to jump on this thing and vote for this first black guy. Well, he's not black, he's not Negro, and he's not African. Well, the term African American, remember there's Arabs up in North Africa, there's white guys down in South Africa, and if any of those people, in fact, I heard one on
WLS. So he's biracial.
They are no
that.
White guy.
We're clear on that.
You know, there, if
There'll
anybody
be some
from
people
comes
who'll
here
vote
becomes
for
a citizen, he is African American.
Okay,
so they
your...
are not the only African Americans.
Okay, so your point would be what?
Well, I mean, I just it's kind of like a need here to me to appease the black folks and their anger. You know, you hear it, and with Reverend Wright, I used to be a photographer. I photographed Jesse Jackson when he said that he worked in a restaurant one time as an order filler, and he said he spit in some honky's iced tea and watched him drink it. I did that. I photographed him in 1968. I've got a picture of it. If I find it, I glad to show somebody.
No,
I think that they're going to be people.
I believe you're not unique in attracting Jesse Jackson to a camera, though.
There are going to be people who are going to vote for him because he's black, and
sure.
people who are going to vote against him because he's
Absolutely.
Black.
Yeah.
Let's go to Tom in Lake Villa on WLS. You're on the air.
Yes, I was originally calling about the Father's Day speech, and first of all, I think that entirely too much is being made of the fact of Obama's race. It should have nothing to do with why you vote for him or whether you vote for him or not. Unfortunately, the Democrats are taking a huge advantage of his race, and they're playing the race card constantly, and Obama himself
plays a race card nearly every day, and I find that extremely
insulting.
In what
way? In what way?
Well, he's out there saying that the GOP, he's warning white people that the GOP are going to try to frighten white people from voting for him.
That's playing
the race card in the reverse way.
If I may ask, how did he say this specifically, that the GOP would frighten black people?
They're going to frighten white people from voting for him because he's black.
There's a piece of video or audio tape that's out there that is suggesting that it was unclear to me who he was giving that speech to, but he was talking about.
Is that the one where he says they're trying to hoodwink you?
Yeah, right.
I don't know all the details of it. The fact of the matter is that they're playing the race card in a reverse way.
And then Michelle is feisty.
Talking about Obama's race.
The Clinton people said that too.
And the fact of the matter is, this lady that's defending him, basically Obama's a socialist. If you look at his Father's Day speech, what he says is, all he highlights the problem, the same thing Patrick Moynihan identified 30 years ago, but what does he say is the solution? More government programs.
Okay, and that's, we're going to be debating that between now and November. Georgia Logothetis has been here. She is with the Daily Kos, and she's Georgia 10. Georgia, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Dan Proft has been with us. He's our conservative commentator from WLS Radio, and the ever-popular Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago has been with us as well. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with Wilbur Entertainment and WLS Radio in Chicago. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Stephanie Lecce for their assistance in the production of this program. Thank you very much for your calls from coast to coast and border to border, and all of our listeners on POTUS every Sunday night on Channel 130. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.